So this morning's reading is from Exodus chapter 7, starting at verse 8 and going through to verse 13. It's Exodus chapter 7, starting at verse 8. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Perform a miracle,' then say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it will become a snake.'" So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron threw his staff down in front of Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. Pharaoh then summoned wise men and sorcerers, and the Egyptian magicians also did the same things by their secret arts. Each one threw down his staff, and it became a snake. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard, and he would not listen to them, just as the Lord had said.
I wonder if you had a similar childhood experience, or perhaps you have heard children express something like this: "My dad's bigger than your dad. My dad's stronger than your dad. My dad could beat up your dad." It seems to me that this childhood sentiment betrays something that is deeply inside every one of us that is human. And that is that we have this need, especially when we feel weak or vulnerable. What we need is someone stronger than us. We need someone bigger than us. We need someone to take care of the things that we don't have the strength to take care of. Of course, this childhood sentiments, for the most part, in a young child's life, a mother or father is usually the authority figure in that child's life. In other circumstances, sometimes it's another person who becomes that authority figure. But then as we get older, our relationship with that authority figure changes. We become teenagers, and suddenly that relationship changes between us and the authority figure that is our parents. And then we get through university and perhaps marry and have family, and suddenly we're the authority figure. But what I want to suggest and what I want to ask is for you to consider in your life, no matter what stage of life you're at right now, each one of us, even as responsible authority figures for other people, we run into these seasons of life where life gets out of control, right? Where life suddenly spins out of control and things happen to us that we don't have control over. And in those situations, I want to suggest that each one of us are just like those children, when what we need most is someone who is stronger, but also someone who is good. As we are working our way through these stories in Exodus, we're asking the question, what is God like? What's he like? The major characteristic of God that runs through the whole story of Exodus, I believe, is this idea that God, the God who made us and made everything, that God is with us. No matter what happens, that God is always with us. But still, as we go through that theme, we're also asking the question, say, what is God like? What are his characteristics? And so we've seen some characteristics of God. We've seen that he is a God who hears the cry of his people when his people are in trouble. He sees that they're in trouble. He remembers his promise, and he cares for them. He's concerned for them. He comes down to rescue them, in fact. This is a God who defines himself, names himself, "I am who I am. I am the one who lives in this eternal present. I am the all-sufficient one," as he reveals himself to Moses. Sometimes, as we learned last week, that God is a God who hides himself. And the people of Israel went through a difficult time after hearing this promise of God, but then it seemed like God was absent. Where was he in this difficult time? The story we come to today is the story that we would call the plagues of Egypt, the 10 plagues as they've become known. I believe that what we learn about God in this story in particular is we learn something about the authority of God. We learn that God is stronger and higher and above every other authority that's on earth, whether human or spiritual. God is above everything, and He is the one who is absolute authority. I really believe that this is the purpose. This statement is made several times, as we'll see, through Exodus chapter 7 through to Exodus chapter 11, this where we find the story of the 10 plagues. We have this phrase, God says to Pharaoh, He says to Moses, He says to the Egyptians, this is happening so that you may know that I am Yahweh. I am the one who's in control, actually. And the plagues give us this incredibly powerful picture that God is the one who is absolutely in control of everything in this world. And actually, that's good news for us. It may seem strange to you to think of this story of the 10 plagues, you know, where God brings destruction in so many different ways in the land of Egypt, to think that this is a good news story. But actually, it is a good news story. Because the purpose behind all these 10 plagues is so that we may know that God is in control. And I don't know about you, but I'm very glad for that. Why is this such good news for us? Let me give some examples. Here's what I believe. It's good news for us to know that God is the absolute one, the one that holds ultimate authority, because that means that there is no complicated situation in life that He does not have the power to unravel. Right? Sometimes life becomes complicated. I don't know about you, but I've experienced that. Whether it's a relational conflict, or whether it's problems with money, or problems with work, or whatever, sometimes life just gets complicated. And we don't have the tools to figure it out. This story helps us remember that there is one who has the power to figure it all out. There is no sadness, or there is no circumstance too painful that He does not have the power to bring relief. Sometimes life hurts. Sometimes it just hurts. This story reminds us that God has the power to bring relief. There is no sadness or grief so deep that His power cannot bring hope and comfort. And so when we're going through a time when it seems like life is really out of control, we can trust that God actually does have it under control. And He can bring us hope because He has the big picture in mind, even when we can't see it. We need to look inside too, and inside of us, sometimes we find in our own hearts there are things that trap us, things that enslave us. And the fact that God is above all means also that there is no sin, there's no bad habit, there's no addiction in my life that He does not have the power to release us from. So this is good news. The story of the 10 plagues, which seems like a whole bunch of bad stuff happening to Egypt, is actually a very good news story for you and me, because it teaches us in no uncertain terms that God is the one who holds all authority in His hands. And if life for you feels a little bit out of control this morning and you're not quite sure who to turn to, this story is designed to tell you that you can turn to God, because He has all the power to help you no matter what your situation is. So the story of the 10 plagues is chapter 7 through to 11. We are really not going to read this whole section. We are really going to do a sort of a helicopter view of these plagues. We're not going to go down into the richness. There's so many lessons that can be learned from this story. I just want to look at them in an overview fashion to really learn what I believe is the main purpose in these plagues. And that is so that we may know that I am God, that He is the one, the great I am in our circumstance, no matter what. Let's talk about the context of this story. If you think about the whole story of the Bible, it teaches us many things about God. It's a love story, right? It's a story about God loving the people that He's made, God bringing rescue to us. This is the whole picture of the story of the Bible. If you imagine the story of the Bible like this on a tapestry or something like that. If you were to take Exodus chapter 7 through 12 and take your X-Acto knife and cut it out of the Bible and have this only as your Bible, what kind of picture of God do you think you would have? Well, it's God who turns water into blood and floods the land with frogs and gnats and flies and locusts. We have to be very careful not to take this picture out of its context. Because the story of Exodus, so there's a context in the story of Exodus, and there's a context in the story of the whole Bible. But the story of the 10 plagues, I believe, is one part of the larger story of Exodus. And the story of Exodus wants to teach us at least 2 things about God and more. But in this story of the plagues, we learn that God is all-powerful. A little later on in the book of Exodus, we read that he is also good. One of the tragedies of our world is that sometimes the authority figures over the children of our world are not good, that they're evil. Right? And this kind of abuse in our world is something that God absolutely hates. But God is not that way. God is absolutely authoritative, but he is also good. Let me just give you a preview of where we'll come to in a couple of weeks. Look at what it says in Exodus 34, where God is speaking to Moses, and he's expanding on his name and his characteristics. And this is what we have to look forward to. This is the good God. Listen to it. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness and rebellion and sin. And yet, he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. So this is a picture which we'll look at in more detail, but we find a picture of a God who is good, who is loving, who is forgiving, but a God who is also just. No evil can exist in his presence, and so he brings judgment also. And so in this story, the story of the plagues, I believe what we're looking for is a thread that teaches us that God is absolutely authoritative and in control, even when things seem out of control. I want to look at the style of the story before we get into it. It just seems to me, as I was reading it this week, it reminded me of a boxing match. Because we really have a contest of power and strength in this story of the plagues. And at the beginning of the story of the plagues, it seems like Pharaoh is saying, well, you know, who is this God and that kind of stuff. We'll look at that. But here's the picture that came to my mind this week. I'm not a boxing fan at all. I don't watch it. But these two guys, I think, have been in the news recently. This is Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Conor McGregor. But there's a couple of boxers who are doing a press conference. Obviously, they're not getting ready to fight right here, but there, this is a contest of power, right? Who's going to back down first? This is power against power. And it just seems to me this is the beginning of the story of the plagues. So in the one corner, we have God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And in the other corner, we have Pharaoh. And this is what Pharaoh says we saw this last week in chapter 5, and here the stage is set for the contest. Chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh, and they said, this is what Yahweh, the Lord, the God of Israel, says, let my people go so that they may hold a festival to me in the wilderness. And Pharaoh says, this is Pharaoh's response from the other corner, who is this God? Who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, Pharaoh says, and I will not let Israel go. We need to learn something about Pharaoh here. Pharaoh thinks of himself as the strongest person in the world. Probably he was pretty close to it. Egypt, in the middle of the 2nd century before Christ, Egypt was one of the most powerful civilizations in the world. And without doubt, the Pharaoh was the big cheese, right? He was the big guy at the top. And he was the big guy at the top, not just because of his political power, but he was the most powerful man, not just politically, but also religiously. Because Pharaoh also represented the gods of Egypt. He was called the high priest of every temple that was in Egypt. And so the power that he held wasn't just political power, it was also religious power, and behind that religious power were the forces of evil that were behind those false gods that Egypt was worshiping at that time. And so Pharaoh really was probably the most strong man on earth, the highest human authority that was possible to stand before on this earth. And so Pharaoh says, who is this God? Who is he? I don't know who he is. And so the stage is set and the contest begins. The passage that Dan read to us a few minutes ago, I would call a prelude to the plagues. So Moses and Aaron, they go into the presence of Pharaoh, and they do what God had instructed them to do several chapters ago, if you were with us. And that is this miracle with the staff. Remember, the staff was the normal tool of a shepherd that Moses and Aaron both carried. And in this case, it's Aaron who throws a staff on the ground in the presence of Pharaoh. And what happens to the staff? It becomes a snake. What's important about a snake in Egypt? The snake in Egypt was the symbol of Pharaoh's power. Do you remember on the headdress of the pharaohs, they had the snake, the cobra. I mean, the snake was really representative of the power of the pharaoh. And so here's this ordinary shepherd's staff becoming a snake on the ground. And by this means, God is asserting his authority over Pharaoh's authority. But what happens in the story? What happened? Well, what we see, surprisingly to us, Pharaoh's magicians have their shepherd staffs. They throw them on the ground and they also become snakes. Scores one each. Right? One for one. But what happens to the snakes that Pharaoh's magicians made? Well, we read in chapter 7 verse 12, Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. That's pretty bad news for Pharaoh. And symbolically, one would think that Pharaoh would be a little worried about this because this is the symbol of his authority that's just been eaten up by the snakes that were made by Moses and Aaron. And yet, what do we read in verse 13? Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard and he would not listen to him, just as the Lord had said. So here's the thing. While we have these words on the screen, we need to do a little bit of a sidebar here. It says Pharaoh's heart became hard. If you read through from chapter 7 through chapter 11, you'll find this repeated, especially in the early part of the parables. In the first half of the 10 plagues, you find this phrase that Pharaoh hardened his heart, or Pharaoh's heart became hard. Towards the middle part, towards the end of the story of the plagues, you read a different phrase. Do you remember what that is? That God hardened Pharaoh's heart. This is pretty mysterious, and I don't want to pretend just to give an easy answer to this. But let me make a suggestion that this all started, and what God is doing through these plagues, and it happens because Pharaoh's heart becomes hard. Pharaoh is really the picture of mankind. Right? So in the big story of the Bible, remember the story of the fall in Genesis chapter 3, where the devil came along and said, did God really say? And that deception was a deception to not believe that God is all-powerful and good, but that he's holding back and he wants us to reach out and take life for ourselves. And Pharaoh is like this representative of humankind who has reached out and taken life for themselves and pushed away God's authority and said, we don't need you, God. We will do life on our own. And Pharaoh's heart becomes hard. And God uses Pharaoh's heart through this whole process to proclaim his authority over creation and to dispel the myth that Pharaoh really was as powerful as he thought he was. Well, so the plagues begin. I want to suggest that we can see the plagues in three groups of three, which is the first nine, and then the final plague kind of stands on its own. We're really not going to go into all 10 of these plagues. We'll take a slightly deeper look into the first three and then sort of just look briefly over the others. What's the first plague? The Nile turns to blood. What is the significance of God turning the Nile River into blood? What was the significance of the Nile to Egypt, this civilization in the desert? Without the Nile River, there would be no civilization. The water gave life to allow the civilization to exist. And so on the one hand, this Nile River that was life-giving, God now comes and changes it to the symbol of death. And everything that's in the river dies. There's something even more in this picture here. In the background, what we realize as we read Egyptian history is that the Nile was personified and worshipped as a god in Egypt. This is how high they had respect for this Nile River that gave them life. It was respected as a god in Egypt. And so this attack on the Nile was really a direct attack on these evil forces in the gods of Egypt. And so what is God doing here in this first plague? God is proclaiming his authority over nature. He is proclaiming his authority over the gods of Egypt all at the same time. Surprisingly, this is what we read in chapter 7, verse 22. But the Egyptian magicians did the same thing by their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as the Lord had said. So here's these magicians that are in Pharaoh's court, who by the forces of evil have some power behind them. And so now the battle's on, right? The battle is raging between God and the forces of evil. And the forces of evil seem to be replicating what God is doing here. And Pharaoh's heart becomes hard and he says, no, I'm not going to let Israel go. So the battle continues. We come to the second plague. This is the plague of frogs. Those cute little green things. They aren't so cute when there's thousands of them in a very small space. It's hard to imagine just that the land is flooded with frogs. God is proclaiming his authority over the natural way of human nature, animal reproduction. He's flooding the land with these frogs. There's something deeper again in this plague. Because there was a goddess by the name of Hecate who was a goddess of childbirth in ancient Egypt, and she was represented with the head of a frog. So once again, what we seem to have here is a plague that is targeting not just showing God's authority over the animal kingdom, but also showing God's authority over this Egyptian goddess. Once again, God is proclaiming his authority in these two areas. And once again, surprisingly, we read chapter 8, verse 7, but the magicians did the same things by their secret arts. They also made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. One would think if these magicians were really thinking about it, they might have tried to use their magic arts to get rid of the frogs instead of adding to the problem. But that's not what they do. Pharaoh, by the way, realizes he's fed up with these frogs, as the story goes. You can read it there. And he cries out to Moses and says, pray to your God who brought these frogs that he would take them away. So Moses prays, God takes the frogs away. But once again, chapter 8, verse 15, but when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart, would not let listen to Moses and Aaron, just as the Lord had said. So in these first two displays of authority, it seems like these counterfeit displays are matching, right? They're doing a similar thing. Something changes in the third plague. It's the plague of gnats. These tiny little critters that you can hardly see, little insects. It says that the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the ground. And throughout the land of Egypt, the dust will become gnats. There's a lot of dust in Bishkek. Can you imagine if every bit of dust was a bug? Unbearable. And here, at this plague, the plague of the gnats, we read these words, verses 18 to 19. But when the magicians tried to produce gnats by their secret arts, so here's the counterfeit power trying to replicate God's power, they could not do it. They could not do it. And since the gnats were on people and animals and everywhere, the magicians said to God, very interesting phrase here, this is the finger of God. Right, so here are these representatives of evil forces recognizing that there is a power that is far and above, higher than them. This is the finger of God, they said. But Pharaoh's heart was hard. He would not listen, just as the Lord said. And what I want to suggest to you, now that we're past these first three plagues, that what happens from here on is that these false powers, these magicians working on behalf of the evil forces in Egypt, they are really left in the dust, so to speak. They are, from here on, they have absolutely no power whatsoever. And here we are, they've been able to counterfeit the first two, kind of. Come to number three, they can't do it. There's still seven more displays of God's power and authority that they don't even come close to touching. And so, this, in fact, that was what we might have seen as a boxing match between persons of approximately equal power becomes something completely different. It becomes like the story of the elephant and the flea. Do you know the joke about the elephant and the flea? Do you know that elephants can have fleas, but fleas can't have elephants? Sorry. But here's the thing, it's ridiculous, right? And there's almost a comedic element in this story as God begins and continues to display his power and authority in the face of the strongest man on earth. And there is absolutely no contest in this whatsoever. God is absolutely displaying that he is the one who has unrivaled authority over every aspect of creation and human life and natural life and every part of this world. We don't have time to enter into the significance of the remaining plagues. Let me just simply make this one comment before we just mention what they are. It's very interesting, in the first three plagues, it seems like that these plagues affect Israel and Egypt alike. The Egyptians and the Israelites together seem to be reaping the effects or living in the results of these first three plagues. But when we get to plague number four, the flies come onto the land. God specifically says in this text, it says that God separates out his people Israel. The flies didn't go to the land of Goshen where the people of Israel living. It was just the people of Egypt that were suffering. And so God in his power and authority isn't limited by anything. And he can put the flies here and not here. I see a picture of the compassion of God for his people here. His people have suffered so much under the hand of Pharaoh. And in the rest remaining seven plagues, he is protecting them as he pours out his signs of authority on the rest of Egypt. So there's flies that come on the land. Once again, a symbol of God's absolute authority over the animal kingdom, insects. Then we have the death of the livestock. So some mysterious disease comes on the livestock of Egypt, not the livestock of Israel, but the livestock of Egypt. And most of the livestock die. Their means of livelihood. Then we come to the third of the second set of plagues, which are boils. So these boils come and affect every human in Egypt. The people living in torment because of the pain and suffering of these boils that are all over their bodies. God is also in control of our human bodies. So then we come into the third set of three plagues. And we find the plague of hail. By the way, the plague of hail is the one that has the longest description, and it'd be interesting for you to read through that and see the details of it. But it seems to me with the plague of hail that God steps up the power level. And the plague of hail is a plague of God sending to earth these hailstones of such size and velocity that any human or animal that is not well undercover is killed by this falling hail. God's power is seen in the hail as it falls on the earth. And following along with that is the plague of locusts. And we see in other places in Scripture, for example, in the book of Revelation, this picture of a plague of locusts like an army sweeping through a land and just reaping, eating up everything in its path and leaving nothing but destruction behind it. And then there's darkness. Darkness such that can hardly be imagined. As we consider these plagues, as you look at them all together, I wonder what comes to your mind. As I looked at the list, it seems to me there's almost an anti-creation thing going on here. That the same God who said, "Let there be light," here in this act of judgment, but also this act of declaring his authority, says, "Yes, I'm the one who created light and life and everything that is good, but I hold this power in my hands as well." And God is declaring that in these plagues, "I am the one who holds all of this world in my hands." With each succeeding plague, Pharaoh's heart is hardened further still, until we come to this final plague, the death of the firstborn sons. There's huge significance to this final plague. We don't have time to go into all of it. But one significance may be seen in the fact that Pharaoh was actually considered the son of the sun god of Egypt, whose name was Re. And God demonstrates by killing the Egypt's firstborn sons that he, unlike the sun god Pharaoh, that he is the true God, that he is the one who really holds the power of life and death in his hands. And this is what God is showing here. It's possible that we can view this also as an act of justice, because you remember years earlier, what had Pharaoh ordered? Pharaoh, using his human authority, had ordered that all of the Hebrew baby boys should be killed. Perhaps this is an act of justice from God. But this is ultimately the act of God which breaks Pharaoh's stubborn heart to the point at least where he says, "Go, all of you, go and worship your God." There's so much more richness and detail in the story. What we're doing is just trying to capture the thread. Why is God giving these plagues? Why do these plagues happen? It is in order to help Pharaoh to know, Egypt to know, Israel to know, Moses to know, and you and me to know that God is absolutely authoritative over every aspect of life. Let me follow some language through the story which just helps us to see it in black and white. We saw already back in Exodus 5 verse 2, as the stage was being set for this contest, that Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord?" He didn't know him. "That I should obey and let Israel go. I do not know the Lord." That's what he said. "I don't know him." The 10 plagues are designed to make sure that by the end that Pharaoh knows that God is the one who holds all authority. Let's follow the story through. In these chapters, there are 7 different times where this phrase or a version of this phrase is used, "so that you may know that I am the Lord." First one is chapter 7, verse 5. This is in the context of this prelude to the plagues where the staffs are being turned into serpents. God says in that context, "so that the Egyptians..." I'm going to do this so that the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh. So God wants the whole land of Egypt to know for certain that God is the God of all creation. Chapter 7, verse 17, in the plague of the Nile being turned to blood, he says, "By this you, Pharaoh, will know that I am Yahweh, I am the ever-existent, all-sufficient God." Chapter 8, verse 10, in the context of the frogs, it says, "so that you may," look at the difference in the language here, "so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God." There's no one like him. He is unmatchable. He is all-powerful. Chapter 8, verse 22, we see in the context of the plague of the flies, "so that you will know that I, the Lord, am in this land." It's an amazing twist in the statement, right? So this is Pharaoh saying, "This is my land," right? This is my kingdom. And God says in the plague of the Pharaohs, "so that you will know that Pharaoh actually, I am the creator of everything. I also am in this land. Chapter 9, verse 14, and also chapter 9, verse 29, there is two instances of this phrase in the plagues, in the plague of hail. At the beginning, as there is this promise of hail to come, there's this statement, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth, God says. There's no one like me in all the earth. And chapter 9, verse 29, after the hail has finished, this happens so that you may know that the earth is the Lord's, that every part of creation belongs to God. And finally, we come to chapter 10. It's actually verse 2 of chapter 10. What's interesting in chapter 10, verse 2, is that God is not speaking to Pharaoh. He's not speaking to the Egyptians. He's actually speaking to Moses. And so this is very interesting that these plagues even are for Moses' benefit, so that you may know, Moses, that I am the Lord. I don't know how difficult life is for you right now, or has been, or will be, but the lesson that we learn, I believe, from this story, the reminder that we come to, is that the God who made us is the God who holds ultimate power over everything. Creation, our bodies, natural life. There's nothing outside of His control. And this is actually good news for us. Let's go back to what we said earlier. Why is it such good news for us? Well, it's because there is no complicated situation in life that God, this God, does not have the power to unravel. We can trust Him. We can turn to Him. That's what He wants, is for us to turn and to trust and have faith. There is no circumstance too painful where He does not have the power to bring relief. Sometimes life is just hard. We can turn to Him. There is no sadness or grief so deep that His power cannot bring hope and comfort. And also, when we make mistakes ourselves, that we need to know that there is no sin, there's no bad habit, there's no addiction in our lives from which He does not have the power to release us. He is the God who holds all power. He invites us today to turn to Him, even as He rescued Israel out of Egypt. He rescues us from slavery to sin, and invites us to be His friends. He invites us to be His lovers in this world, to be those who walk with Him day by day. I pray that somehow this story of the 10 plagues that seems such a bad news story in so many ways, that it would perhaps be a good news story for you. Because God is trustworthy, and He is able, and He is good. Father, thank You so much for Your word. Thank You for these stories that come alive and that come, and they come alive in our own experience. Help us to know how it is that we may live into the biblical story. Help us to know how it is that we can turn to You, the all-powerful, almighty God, when we run to the end of ourselves. When we come to the end of our own strength, we can turn to You. Help us to do that. Help us not to just keep struggling on our own, but help us to receive from You, to lay our lives down in Your hands. I pray that You'll give us courage today. For those where life is difficult, I pray that You'll bring hope. Help us to trust. Help us to walk believing fully that You are a God that is all-powerful, and that You are a God who is very good. Thank You for sending Jesus to be our rescuer. Thank You for the way in which He represents, really, the center and the heart of Your kingdom. Help us to worship You with all of our hearts, with all of our lives. I pray in the beautiful name of Jesus. Amen.